Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles, and investment ideas from Tom, me, and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters. Hello and welcome to the Personal Investor Podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, is China still the great opportunity for investors that it once was? Those backing China have been made to wait as the giant Asian economy undergoes growing pains. Will they be rewarded for their patience? That's our focus today as we bring you an interview with one of the leading investors in China. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. For some time now, China has been simply too big for investors to ignore. Those backing the country during its periods of rapid economic growth were handsomely rewarded, but more recently returns have been disappointing. COVID and regulatory risks are just two of the challenges it has faced. Now the market is available at historically cheap valuations. So is a recovery in China now due? There's few better place to answer that question than Dale Nichols. He manages the Fidelity China Special Situations Investment Trust, one of the most popular ways for UK investors to access China. Dale recently sat down with podcast regular Tom Stevenson, and today we bring you that conversation. Tom began by asking Dale about the case for investing in China now.
So from an investor's perspective, China has been pretty out of favour recently. So maybe you could just sort of set out the case for investing in China.
Yeah, I think the case, the investment case would be you're looking at a market where it's heavily influenced by geopolitics, macro decisions, basically the headlines that you see every day. Whereas on the ground, the companies are kind of getting on with it. There are a lot of companies that are completely, not impacted at all by these factors, getting on with it and delivering earnings growth over time. And there's a lot of change happening on the ground. There's, clear winners emerging. And at the same time, we're seeing, better shareholder returns in terms of buybacks and dividends at the same time. So, in many ways, as a bottom-up stock picker, it's kind of a pretty good market.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll get into some of those things that you said there. But just before we get there, there are also risks involved in investing in China as well. So just lay those out as well.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, over the past few years, regulation has been an issue. I would argue that this is somewhat cyclical in terms of tighter regulation. But clearly, the past few years we've been through, probably the hardest and longest sort of tightening regulation. But again, I would argue that the regulatory environment domestically is quite different now, and there's a lot more support on growth. And then geopolitics has become much more of an issue. And there are companies that are impacted by policies, that are coming out of the US as well. So that's a factor as well. So, I think they're probably the biggest risks. At the same time, domestically, clearly the economy's slowed, and we're going through a pretty significant adjustment in the property sector. Yeah. So we need to see how that plays out. I think the risks there can be managed, but you'd have to highlight them as clear risks.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about the property sector, because when people talk about China, it's rare for them in the same breath not to be talking about what's going on in the property sector. Sure. So what's the importance of that to the Chinese economy?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty significant part. It's up to 30% in terms of overall exposure. Many people would say that's smaller now, but still, it's significant. It's also, a significant part of, the consumer balance sheet. So it's clearly what's happening in the property sector is going to impact the mindset of the consumer. So significant, probably becoming less important, but still a significant factor. So it's, the trends there do need to be watched.
Yeah. So you mentioned the consumer there. And I guess one of the other big factors recently has been the emergence of China from COVID.
Right.
And there was a lot of optimism at the start. People thought China's coming out of COVID. It didn't quite work out as people expected. And what was going on there?
Well, I think you have to recognize that China didn't stimulate through COVID like a lot of countries in the West did. So, perhaps sort of coming out, there isn't as a strong, a recovery. I think being locked up for 3 years also has its, has its impact as well. So we came out in a sort of a weaker economic environment. I think, you know, it's fair to say, you know, there's sort of, you know, general consumer confidence is impacted by employment conditions. You had some of the big tech companies, you know, cutting, you know, quite a few staff and that sort of thing. So I think there's sort of just been, you know, a general lack of confidence, I think, is the way I'd put it. And just not the momentum coming out that we see in many of, you know, the other countries in the West.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so you've talked about some sort of China-specific things there, the emergence from COVID, the importance of the property sector, the regulation. So how does investing in China differ maybe from investing in other parts? Well, you've been running this trust now for 10 years, I think. So you've got a good grasp of how to invest in China. How does it differ?
Yeah, I think, you know, in any market you're investing in, regulation is an issue. I mean, in any market you're investing in, you're thinking about the sort of operating environment for an individual company. And clearly regulation is obviously part of that. I think it's fair to say it's a bigger factor in China. And I say regulation, thinking of geopolitics as well, it's a significant factor. But at the same time, I think there's more similarities, and I think that's often overstated. There are a lot of companies that have very little impact from what's happening, both in terms of domestic regulation and in terms of geopolitics. And I think that's sometimes lost. Mm. So I think there's actually a lot more similarities than other markets, but, you know, the differences I find are often overemphasized. But I do, like other markets, I think what will really drive the market over the long term is what's happening with earnings and capital return from companies.
Yeah. Let's talk about that then. Sure. So what is happening on the ground? What's happening to earnings?
Yeah, so if you look at MSCI China, that grew probably sort of high single digit last year. I think, you know, if you look at consensus for this year, we're probably talking low teens. There have been downward revisions, but I think, you know, it's not a bad environment. When you consider, you know, obviously a 5% growth target in terms of GDP for the year and a pretty good first quarter, as you saw. So, you know, with a slowly improving sort of economic backdrop, that's not, you know, I think that's probably achievable, and that actually stacks up pretty well on a global basis. Mm-hmm. in terms of overall earnings growth. Obviously, there'll be difference between sectors, but in general, I think the earnings outlook isn't that bad. And I was just going to add, just particularly when you combine it with what we're seeing in terms of companies doing more in terms of capital return, increased buybacks, increased dividends, I think that's going to become, you know, increasingly more of a focus for investors.
Right. Okay. So those fundamental attractions are in place. Obviously, that's only one half of the investment equation.
Right.
Valuation is the other one. And I guess that's what really jumps out at me about the Chinese market, is that it seems, on the face of it, to be a very cheap
Absolutely.
Market. So, I mean, have you ever seen China this cheap? And what will the catalyst be to improve those valuations?
Yeah, it's a good question. In terms of, you know, historically, you know, we're sort of looking at MSCI China maybe on about 9x forward earnings, which is, I think, more than a standard deviation off historical levels. Maybe not the cheapest it's been, but definitely in the vicinity of the cheapest. In terms of that discount versus other markets like the US, obviously it's the, you know, I think it is the widest we've seen. But in terms of, you know, in terms of what's required to sort of, you know, for that value to be recognized, I don't know if there's a specific catalyst. I think it's just about the delivery of earnings. Despite all these concerns, the regulatory concerns, the geopolitical concerns, the macro concerns, companies delivering earnings. I think that is, you know, I think when people realize, hang on, despite all these concerns, earnings are still growing, the winners are winning, taking share, getting stronger. And combined with what I said about, you know, potentially more capital return, I think they're probably the factors that can come together to help things get re-rated.
Yeah. Yeah. So it requires investors generally, probably within China and externally, to see the opportunities. Where are you seeing the opportunities at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, the overall fund in terms of the way it's positioned, the biggest bet from a sector perspective is actually industrials. And that is obviously pretty broad, so it spans a number of areas. But we're seeing the emergence of very strong, you know, companies in the industrial space that have invested heavily in R&D, and you see that coming through in the strength of the products in terms of pricing power. You know, there's also the consolidation element that I talked about that's definitely underway. There's a lot of domestic substitution that's happening as well. There are still quite a few sectors that are dominated by foreign players, and with the bifurcation of supply chains, etc. I think there is probably an emerging preference for, you know, for domestic suppliers. So that stands out. In terms of the bigger change more recently, I would just say the consumer. We talked about, how cheap stocks have got and a number of companies that are actually not influenced or impacted by what's happening geopolitically. A lot of names in the consumer space around concerns about weak consumer confidence, et cetera, but companies with very strong franchises that are sort of trading at bargain valuation. So I think at the margin, I'm probably doing more in the consumer space than others.
Okay. All right. Okay, so we've talked a bit about the macro backdrop and the sector backdrop. Let's talk a bit about the trust itself now. So maybe you could just describe what the objectives of the trust are, how you go about managing it,
right,
and also just what the advantages maybe of investing through the investment trust structure are.
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously the goal is to beat the benchmark, but I think more broadly, we're trying to give investors the broadest exposure to the range of opportunities that are in China. And, you know, I think the trust is uniquely, structured to capitalize on that. Obviously, we can use the gearing. So at a time like now where, sentiment is bad, stocks are cheap, this is the time when gearing is higher. So that's why we're currently, more than 120% geared in the trust. So relatively high from that perspective.
And just to explain that little bit, so that means that you've borrowed money in addition to the funds provided by shareholders.
So you've leveraged
up the potential returns.
Yeah. So obviously that's the way the fund is structured. And, we feel like we're capitalizing on the tools that are given to us to, again, capitalize at a time when sentiment is bad, stocks are cheap. Now is the time to be more aggressive on that front. We do have given that it is a closed-end vehicle, obviously, we can do more in the small cap space without having concerns about flows. We can also invest in private companies. So as you know, we can invest up to 15% in private companies.
And are you using that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that percentage for us is down at about 13%. Now it's come down with the broader base of assets that we now have with the acquisition. So it's come down a little, but... we can invest in private companies as well. And that really fits into that narrative of the broadest scope of opportunities. There are companies like ByteDance in the private space, unlisted, that are now the biggest company in terms of earnings in the whole tech sector in China. So, we definitely want to have the opportunity to invest in those types of opportunities. And I think you actually have to have a full picture of what's happening, in the whole sector. So that ability to invest in private companies, I think, is really important. And then finally, I'd just say the ability, to use derivatives to be able to short as well. Obviously, now is a time with valuations where there are, there's probably less shorting opportunities, but they're there as well.
So these are negative bets on on companies that you don't think are going to do well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there are a number of ways in which the trust is different from maybe other vehicles for investing in China. You mentioned the private companies, the derivatives, the gearing.
Right.
I just wonder in what sort of market conditions you would expect this trust to do well or conversely not to do so well.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because we have gearing. We have, a fair proportion of small cap companies, which, generally do better in up markets. But we do have a fair proportion of companies that I think you'd put in the value category and are more steady growth companies. So I think the ideal environment would be one of steady returns. A nice, steady upmarket, slow upmarket would probably be the ideal environment for the companies that we have in the portfolio for that value to be realized.
Now, just focusing on the trust itself again, recently there was a bit of corporate activity. The trust was merged with another investment trust in the sector, Aberdeen. So how important was that? And how important is size in this regard?
Yeah, well, obviously having more, we're bigger as a result, and having more liquidity is great for our investors. I think consolidation in the sector, is also, probably... a positive as well from that same liquidity perspective. And for us, I think, the timing is good. So, having more assets now at a time where, as I've said, there's a lot of opportunity in the market. It's good to be putting more money to work in this type of environment. So, Yeah, it's all quite positive, I think.
Okay. And one, just finally, just one aspect of investment trusts that we haven't mentioned yet is that as quoted companies themselves, they have an ability to trade at a premium or right. a discount to the value of their underlying assets. And in line with most investment trusts, mm-hmm. Fidelity China Special Situations has traded at a discount. So,
that's right.
So what is the board doing to manage that discount?
Right. So the board has an express policy of obviously keeping the discount in single digits. So they're quite active in the market most days, buying back stock. So I think, we've bought back around 4% of outstanding shares in the last year. And that makes sense. Obviously, it's, immediately accretive when we're buying at a discount. So, they're pretty active in the market at these times where you see, the discount where it is.
Okay, Dale, thank you very much. Great insights there into the Chinese market and also the trust which you've been running now for 10 years. So thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, Tom.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorised financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation.